Welcome to Crime Suit Podcast. I'm your host, Kaylee Carter.
And I'm Hannah.
And this week is our spooktacular Halloween special. Ooh. Let's cue the intro music and then we'll explain the very fun and very spooky game we're going to play today. Alright, since this is our last episode of October, Hannah and I decided to play a spooky little game with you all. The basic rules of the game are this. Hannah and I are each going to share three scary stories, two of which must be fictitious, but one is a true story. After I finish sharing my scary stories, Hannah is going to try and guess which one of them is real, and vice versa. Alright, Hannah, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Rad. Okay, this is my first scary story. I think we all agree that our homes are the place where we feel the most safe, or at least they should be. Tracy felt similarly about her own home. She inherited the two-story Rambler from her late mother and took great care in maintaining it. She had lived in the house for about 15 years at that point, when something strange started happening. The first thing she noticed was the smell. Putrid, stinking. But only every once in a while. Tracy thought that there might be something wrong with the sewer, so she called a plumber. But the plumber found no issues with the septic line. She tried not to think about it after that. The more worrisome issue was the noise. Old houses always creak, and having grown up in the house, Tracy had grown to find comfort in the sound of the house shifting over time. But something changed the night at the dinner table when she heard scuttling in her bedroom that was directly above the dining room. The sound of footsteps sent the hair on the back of her neck standing as she sat in a thickness of fear that seemed to paralyze her. Someone was in her bedroom. As soon as the adrenaline kicked in, Tracy fled and asked her nephew to check the house before she returned. But there was nothing. And no one. No sign of anything taken. No forced entry. No person. But something felt off in a way she couldn't explain. The strange sounds continued, faint enough to pass as scrambling mice, but frequent enough to put her on edge. So she set out some mouse traps to ease her anxiety. It was probably just mice the whole time, she thought to herself. But the mouse traps lay empty for the coming weeks. Nothing was immediately concerning enough to warrant being afraid. And yet, Tracy felt the uneasiness building inside her as every day went by. The noises alone wouldn't have been the worst thing, but it was the feeling of being watched that really took a toll on Tracy. It felt like the noises followed her around the house, and that those noises were being made by some being watching her from the shadows, observing, waiting, driving her to madness. Tracy's nephew visited several more times over the next few weeks. He became increasingly worried about his aunt's mental health. Sometimes your body recognizes things before you realize it, and Tracy felt like her body was trying to tell her something. Tracy was hardly sleeping, and the perpetual state of drowsiness over the next 2 weeks after all this began was starting to make her delirious. She had begun to imagine eyes on her whenever she was in the house. She would jump around corners with the baseball bat she now carried with her. Her once sanctuary had become a living hell, a hell that no one else could even see. But Tracy felt the eyes watching her every move, making her morning coffee, as she showered, and as she lay restlessly sleeping. Which is why it almost felt validating to be woken up mid-slumber to the sight and sound of 4-inch construction nails being pounded into the ceiling of her bedroom from the attic, directly over her bed. Tracy had never been so sobered after being woken up in her life. She thought she might be dreaming. Convinced that there was something supernatural in her home, she fled and brought back her nephew once again to inspect the poltergeist, which she now realized must have been living in the attic. But to everyone's surprise, there was no demon in the attic. In fact, that might have been preferable to the scenario at hand. Instead, Tracy's ex-boyfriend from over 12 years ago, Earl, had been stalking Tracy. He decided to move into her attic and had been surveilling her through manipulated air vents for over 2 weeks at that point. The putrid smell was cups of waste Earl had produced during his time in Tracy's home. The sounds of scurrying were actually Earl moving air vents around to make room for him to watch Tracy's every move all throughout the top floor of her home. When Tracy's nephew finally confronted Earl, he ran down the stairs and out of Tracy's home. The police still haven't been able to find him, and Tracy knows to never ignore her gut again.
Okay, so I feel like that story sounds very familiar, but I don't remember if it's because I've heard it as a scary story or if I heard it because it was a scary true story. So, but that does sound like something that could happen. So I'm gonna keep that in the back of my head and then weigh it against your other two stories and see which one I feel like is probably the most likely to be true.
This is my second story, and it's going to be told in a little bit different way. But this is a story about June and Jennifer. They were twins born in the UK, and they lived in a teeny little town in Wales. And June and Jennifer were ostracized by the community from the time they were very small, and they learned to rely heavily on each other. So much so that they didn't speak to anyone else except each other. Even their parents. And it got so bad over time that they created their own little language that no one else could understand. Jennifer and June refused to participate in any school activities, and one day a school psychologist suggested to June and Jennifer's parents that they send June and Jennifer to different boarding schools, separate boarding schools, to see if it could cure their severe codependence on each other. Their parents agreed, and June and Jennifer were shipped off to separate boarding schools, but soon it took a turn for the worse. They became catatonic. They refused to eat, to move, to participate in school in the slightest, and they were wasting away for over 2 weeks until the teachers became really concerned about their health and decided to send them back home to reunite. And when they did, June and Jennifer became even more isolated with each other, and they spent the next several years not attending school, just playing in their rooms with dolls. But June and Jennifer were gifted some diaries one year for Christmas, and they started to write, and they wrote bizarre and kind of terrifying stories about children who committed crimes, and one story was about a dad who killed the family dog, and the family dog's spirit overtook one of the children's bodies and enacted revenge on the dad. Like, very strange stories. And June and Jennifer actually pooled some of their money to get these books published. But as June and Jennifer got older, they turned to alcohol and drugs and eventually started committing petty crimes like theft and vandalism and worked their way up to arson and started burning down buildings. And after that, they were committed to a mental institution where they were heavily drugged and sedated for a number of years. And since they refused to speak to anyone else except each other, they were held in this facility for much longer than they probably needed to be, and it drove them even more mad. So much so that June and Jennifer created a pact that one of them needed to die in order to escape this place, because they were convinced that they were feeding off of each other's energy and mirroring each other so much that they couldn't participate in the outside world. So the only way to fix this was if one of them died. Well, Jennifer offered to kill herself. And after they made that decision together, over the next few days, Jennifer declined to the point where she started to die. And there was no real reason for her to die, but her heart became weaker and weaker until she passed away. After this point, June started speaking with people after years and years of silence, and she was able to leave the facility and live a normal life. And no one knows really why Jennifer died, but it was almost like as soon as Jennifer died, June was free. She began speaking, she attended school, she stopped writing after that, but she wanted to live a normal life, and she moved to live near her parents, and she did live a normal life.
Okay, so this story also sounds familiar, but again, I can't remember if it was just a scary campfire story about twins, because twins are freaky.
No offense to any twins out there.
Full offense, you're freaky. No. You know, it's even freakier than twins, triplets.
It just gets more scary as the number goes up.
The more that there are, the scarier it is.
Yeah. For different reasons, too, each time.
No, but I've heard that story before, and so I'm leaning more toward that it's true. But if it is true, that is a very scary true story, because like the whole like she died for unknown reasons. She just kind of like gave up the ghost, and then they had like their own language and stuff. I don't know that. Yeah, that one might be true. But I want to hear your third story and see how I still feel.
Third and final story. Jane had been babysitting her three younger siblings since she was 8, so nothing felt particularly eventful about her parents asking her to watch the kids when they left on an overnight trip. She was 11 now, after all, the pinnacle of human development and perfectly capable of watching her 9, 6, and 3-year-old siblings. Jane's parents were nervous, though. They ran all throughout the house, locking the windows, making sure there was food in the fridge, and generally fussing about their quick trip. But Jane was excited to have the house to herself and her siblings. They planned to stay up all night, drinking chocolate milk, eating all the frozen burritos, and watching every VHS in the cupboard. Jane ushered her parents out of the house as they barked commands. "Don't forget to lock all the doors. Close the blinds. Go to bed at a reasonable hour." "Yes, yes, I will," Jane pushed back. She waved them off and went back inside, carefully locking the door behind her. The party had begun. The frozen burritos were cooked, the chocolate milk was being guzzled, the movies were being watched. It was a perfect night as far as they were all concerned. But the bender ended late, and everyone had fallen asleep on the couch in front of the TV. Jane awoke to the sounds of the TV buzzing sometime in the night. She looked around the dark room and saw her siblings passed out on the couch around her. "I guess I better check all the doors," she thought. Jane wiped her eyes and made her way to the side door, when something outside the window caught her eye. It looked like a person running right past the window. Not trying to freak herself out, Jane convinced herself that she must still be half asleep. But she still wanted to check to make sure the doors were locked. Jane hurried to the side door, even though she remembered locking it. Strangely enough, the deadbolt was unlocked. She clicked it upwards and felt a rush of anxiety as she thought of the other doors and the blinds she must have forgotten to close. Jane hurried through the house, closing the blinds, when she saw it again, but much clearer this time. Someone ran past the window. Someone was outside the house. Jane's ears started to ring as the panic set in. She yelled to wake her siblings while running to the front door to lock it. Right as she slid the deadbolt into place, the doorknob jiggled. Jane's heart stopped beating as she watched the doorknob move slowly from side to side. Backing up, but never removing her eyes from the door, she motioned to her awake and terrified siblings to follow her down the hallway. It felt dangerous to speak, so they all piled carefully through the house to their parents' room. Jane locked her siblings in her parents' room and ordered the oldest to call Mom and Dad. Jane could hear their panicked crying through the door as she searched the room for the gun she knew her dad had somewhere. Jane had never shot a gun before, but she felt like she had no choice. The thud of the door being kicked open made Jane's blood run cold. Jane took position in front of the door her siblings were behind, bat in hand, ready to swing. The steps stopped at the front of the door, and Jane took a step forward, ready to defend her siblings. When the door swung open, revealing her dad in the doorway. Apparently, he wanted to teach Jane a lesson about locking the doors and following directions. And he thought this would be a fun little trick to play on her.
Okay, so that one... Oh, yeah. I just feel like that would be so dumb. I don't know. I wouldn't do that to my kids because I feel like I would get, like, shot and killed.
Yeah.
Like, she knew where her dad's gun was, right?
She was looking for it.
Yeah, yeah. So she knew that there was a gun in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that sounds like a terrible idea. That one could also be true, though, because, like, yeah, I could see someone doing that. So the first story was the boyfriend, Earl, who had been stalking his ex-girlfriend and living in her attic, mm-hmm. which that one could be true. Jennifer and June. I'm going to say, I'm going to say that Jennifer and June's story is the true one, but the other two also sound like if they haven't happened or if they are fictitious, they also could very well happen. That's my guess. That's what I'm going with.
That's right.
Okay, so that's a true story?
The Jennifer and June is a true story, yes.
So when did it happen?
It happened in 1930.
That is so creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you said Jennifer killed herself?
Yeah. I mean,
but nobody knows how she died.
She technically didn't kill herself because she died of inflammation on the heart and there were no drugs in her system when she died.
They're like saying she just willed it into existence?
Yes, she just willed herself to die.
No.
Okay.
That is too freaky.
Do you want to? Okay. Dumb bitch hours are 24/7. and I wrote two true stories and one lie.
Okay, is the attic one true?
It's not, but it is. Like, that has happened before, but I made a lot of stuff up.
Okay, so you embellished it, but that's... Because I've heard something very similar to that and been freaked out.
Yeah, yeah.
Where people have been like, oh yeah, I found so-and-so living in my attic.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why attics are so terrifying.
Yes, it's one of the reasons.
Attics and basements.
Dang, I don't know what it is about those two things.
There's somebody above me and there's someone below me. It's funny because I live in a basement. So
you are the ghost.
Exactly. I'm the thing that goes bump in the night. It's just me going to the bathroom.
The story of Jane is my story, though. My dad did that to me.
Okay, that's... So wait, they're all true?
I mean, the story of Tracy isn't real. Like, I've heard of stories of people living in people's attics, but I just made that up.
Yeah.
Everything is made up. It's plausible. It has happened to somebody, but not the way that I told it. And not, like, that story isn't real.
You're out here to trick me. I didn't do that with your stories.
I was trying to trick you.
Yeah, you succeeded.
Done tricked right. you.
Okay. Do you want to try and guess my stories?
Yes, I do. Bring it on.
Okay. I'm so embarrassed. I was at work late last night working graveyard listening to scary stories.
No. Nope. Nope. Immediately no.
Because I was trying to find good ones, and I was scared the shit out of myself.
Why did you do that? I actually did the same thing, but I wasn't freaking working a graveyard shift.
I work graveyard in a blood bank. And
no!
There's windows and glass, and we have morgue doors.
No. Hannah, you're going to get attacked by a vampire if you keep going down this road.
Okay, you are going to love my first story.
I'm excited. Okay.
Okay. This first scary story is about sharks.
I love sharks.
You do love sharks. I know. I did this for you. Okay, so this is the story. This is mainly the story of a woman named Deborah. So Deborah was an extremely skilled sailor, and she was going to be part of a 5-person crew, and they were sailing from Maine down the East Coast down to Florida. And she and the crew were all very experienced, and the weather was supposed to be absolutely perfect. They were like, this is going to be the smoothest sailing. There should be no problems. But... you know that you should always be prepared, right? Unfortunately, this crew was not prepared. And unfortunately, the Captain John, he ended up getting drunk one night, thinking that I don't need to be sober for this. This is going to be the easiest sailing of my life. But an unexpected tropical storm hit, and their boat ended up capsizing. The captain's girlfriend, actually, as they are... all fleeing the boat. Luckily, they all got off of the boat alive, but Meg, his girlfriend, got this giant bloody gash on her leg. So luckily, they had an inflatable dinghy that they were able to inflate, and they all got onto it. So their ship goes down, and as the last person is trying to pull themselves up into the boat, they feel something bump against their leg. And they look down, and there are hundreds of sharks. So the sharks had been drawn to the boat because of the gash in Meg's leg. They could smell the blood. They could taste the blood from miles away, right? At one point, one of the sharks actually grabbed a rope that was hanging loose from the boat and started dragging the boat around. Hours turned into days, and the starving crew became severely dehydrated. There was urine and blood and pus from Meg's wounds sloshing about on the floor of the dinghy, and the crew started developing infections all over their bodies. By the third day, with infection and dehydration rife, the crew began to get delirious as their brains were starved of water. Two of the crew, John and Mark, started to drink the salt water. Before long, John started hallucinating. He thought he saw land, and he jumped off the side of the boat. Blood-curdling scream. But then it was over and there was silence. The shark got him. Shortly after John's death, Mark started hallucinating. He started mumbling about there being a convenience store nearby and he was going to go and get some cigarettes. The crew tried to stop him, but he also went overboard. The sharks instantly moved in, banging against the bottom of the boat and spinning it around as they tore into Mark's flailing body in a frenzied attack. And then that night, Meg's infection took a hold of her and she began having severe hallucinations. She was dying right in front of them. When they woke up in the morning, Meg was also dead. They said a quick prayer and then they threw her body overboard. The last people alive are Deborah and Brad. Brad almost falls overboard as he's trying to clean all of the blood and the urine out of the bottom of the boat. He started to stumble. He almost fell backwards, but Deborah grabbed him and pulled him back in. But the happy ending to this story, a Russian cargo ship was spotted and rescued the last two people. The only two remaining people out of that five-person crew.
Terrifying. 10 out of 10 spookies.
100 sharkies.
They were just hungry boys.
Dude.
I feel like that could be totally legit. Captain Johns can be idiots, I guess. So that's legit to me. I would believe that.
Captain Johns.
And it's supposed to be two fake ones, one real one, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm ready for the next one. I think that could be totally legit, but I want to hear.
Well, if I did my job right, they should all sound like they could be true.
Here we are.
Not like you pulling out pranks. I don't know. You're like, they are all true. I could not control myself.
It's the ADHD goblin who lives in my brain.
One job to do.
And I did all of them instead.
Okay. So story number two is the story of a man named Bill Olson. So Bill Olson was a middle-aged single man who lived in North Dakota, and he worked at a local lumber mill. Bill was really charming, he was funny, he was well-known in the area, and he was a regular at several bars where he would occasionally pick up women. His life looked like it was going fine from the outside, until he started exhibiting some strange behaviors in the summer of 1972. Coincidentally, very soon after his mom passed away in June. He started frequenting his favorite bars more often, going right after work and then staying until closing. People were concerned about him, but they also knew he had just lost his only remaining parent, so they figured they just needed to give him some time to mourn before he'd be back to his usual self. Except Bill didn't get better. He got much worse, eventually losing his employment at the local lumber mill. He was frequently absent from work, and his supervisor reported that on the days he actually did show up, he was usually either drunk or hungover. This is when the first woman came forward to police about Bill. A woman came forward named Sharon who reported that she had met Bill at one of the local bars the previous weekend. She'd spent the night at his house, but was jolted awake when she felt a heavy weight on her chest and couldn't breathe. She opened her eyes to see Bill straddling her, his hands around her throat. She woke up later that morning hoping it was just a bad dream, but she could still feel on her neck where his hands had been. The police told her there was nothing they could do. She didn't have any evidence, she didn't appear hurt, and basically said, just stay away from him. Sharon thought she was going crazy. She told more people about her night with Bill, but his reputation as the local nice guy was just too strong. He just lost his mother, they'd say, before changing the subject. However, just a few weeks after Sharon's violent encounter with Bill, another woman came forward, this time with bruises on her neck and face. Police decided to pay Bill a little visit. The police knocked at his front door, but there was no answer. Just as they were about to leave, one of the deputies noticed a light coming from the shed in the backyard. They shouted Bill's name, but they didn't hear a response. When they opened the shed door, they found Bill on the floor in a puddle of blood. His hands had been cut off with his own table saw. They secured the crime scene and began collecting evidence when they stumbled upon an apparent suicide note from Bill that simply said, I can't make them stop. My hands have a mind of their own. Police initially speculated that Bill must have been suffering from delusions and killed himself, but there was one glaring piece of evidence missing. Bill's hands were nowhere to be found.
What the frickin' frack? No, that's a scary story made up to scare me. That's not real. I'm gonna wait to cast my final vote until I hear the third and final story, but that was made up to freak me out. I'm ready to be spooked.
Okay, my third and final scary story is about a woman named Susie. So Susie was asked kind of last minute to be a camp counselor for an all-girls camp. I think someone canceled last minute. They needed a new counselor, and she agreed. So she's like, okay. after work. I'll drive up, but I'm going to get there really late. And they're like, that's fine. We have a cabin all ready for you. So Susie gets off work. She packs her stuff as fast as she can. And she gets to the camp, and most everyone's already asleep because it's really late. It's about 11:30, midnight.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one person, the nurse meets her, and the last cabin remaining is the one furthest from everyone else. So all the ones close to the mess hall are all filled with girls who are all sleeping, but kind of far off, tucked away, closer to the woods, there's this lone cabin, and she doesn't have a roommate or any other counselor staying with her. She's like, well, you know, this is kind of nice. I have my own cabin, and I don't have to worry about staying up too late or annoying anyone. It's just my own little private cabin. This should be really nice. The nurse shows her to her cabin, kind of a walk. But when they get there, the nurse says, okay, and just so you know, these cabins are really old. The door handles don't really work super well. So there's a trick where you have to kind of bump into the door and you have to pull to one side really hard to get it to open because they're just so old. And so Susie's like, okay, yeah. And she practiced it a couple times. She's like, yeah, I think I got this. I can do this. And she goes, the nurse told her most of all the other cabins are the same way, you know. So tomorrow, if you need to go into any of the other cabins, it's the same thing. So Susie says goodnight to the nurse and starts setting up her cabin. And by this point, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning and it's pretty dead quiet, except for she might hear some faint rustling here and there from like raccoons or other animals or mice, you know. But as she's setting up her bed and she's kind of putting her clothes away and getting ready for the night, about to brush her teeth, she hears a knock at the door. Just a knock, knock, knock. And she kind of is confused because she's like, she thinks maybe it's the nurse and says, hello? But there's no answer. And so she thinks, well, if it's the nurse, she should respond. So she kind of says, you know, Grace? But nobody responds. So her heart kind of starts pounding a little bit more. And she's thinking, like, I know that I heard a knock at the door. That was definitely a knock at my door. And then, just as she's thinking she's going to just brush her teeth and go to bed, because there's obviously no one responding, she sees somebody's jiggling the door handle. And they're jiggling it and jiggling it rapidly, rapidly. And they can't get the door open, even though it's not locked. And she's thinking to herself, she's like, Grace told me that everyone here knows how to open this door. Right? So who would be jiggling the handle? So she's scared at this point. And she was like, I don't think whoever's at the door is a camper. So she goes as quietly as possible and she kind of backs into her cabin further and further into the dark and just tries to stay as still as possible and not make any noise so that maybe whoever's there will just leave. And then she sees a figure move past the window and she just tries to stay as still as possible, thinking maybe they won't see me. But then, as she's waiting, she hears something up on top of her cabin on the roof. And she looks up. And looking down at her through the skylight is a man in a ski mask. Just staring at her. But luckily, Susie, she didn't freeze this time. She was like, if he's up there, I'm out of here. So she instantly, with every ounce of strength she has, runs to the door, swings it open, and just runs as fast as she can to try and get to the other campers, to the other cabins, and wake everyone up and let them know that there's somebody who's terrorizing her. And so she gets to another cabin, and they calm her down, and they say, you know, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. We'll take a look, you know. And so they kind of take a look around the camp, and they don't find anyone. And they're kind of like, it's okay, there's nobody here. Whoever it is, maybe you scared them off. And she has a hard time sleeping that night. But then the next morning, they hear on the radio, there's an escaped convict from a prison just down the road. And he's wanted for murder.
Gross. I hate that. Hate it. Hate it. Hate it. Oh my gosh. This is exactly why I get so freaked out when I camp. Yeah, camping is like the scariest thing for me. I like being outside. I like hiking. I like the idea of camping, and I want to like it. But every time I'm camping, I can't sleep because I'm just too freaked out.
I can't sleep, but it's because there's like so many noises. Like there's so many like bugs and animals and rain, and I can't handle it.
It's the person lurking in the shadows for me. That's the reason I can't sleep.
If you stopped choosing campgrounds next to prisons.
Yes. Maybe you wouldn't have such a terrible time camping.
But the land is cheap. So naturally, those two things go together.
It's hard to turn that down. Okay, so the first story was idiot Captain John. with the sharks. The second story was, oh my gosh, hello.
It was Bill Olson.
Bill Olson. He chopped off his hands.
He cut off his own hands.
And two of them are fake and one is real. I think the camping one is real.
So, I heard the camping story as a kid.
It's made up.
I was told that it was true. But I called all of my siblings and I said, hey, you remember this story? And none of them could remember it.
What? It only traumatized you?
Well, Susie... it was a woman who was our Sunday school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that that was a true story that happened to her.
That is nuts.
And as a kid and as an adult, I was just like, I can't even believe that's true. That's crazy. And so I was like, I need to make sure that this is true. But none of my siblings remembered hearing it. I remembered it very vividly. So since I can't find anyone to back it up, I'm going to have to say that that's my false story. But that is the story that was told to me as a kid.
Is the real story the hands story?
No, it's the sharks.
Oh my God.
I was very proud of myself. I wrote the story of Bill Olson.
Dang.
And okay. It took me hours, but I was like, I'm going to write a short, scary story. And I like wanted to make sure it was scary enough. And so I turned off all the lights and I grabbed a flashlight and I illuminated my face and I told it to Nathaniel and he was not okay afterwards.
It's not enough that I traumatize myself. I have to traumatize others with me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But the shark story is a true story that I heard on the Moth Radio podcast. The Moth Radio Hour. Yeah, and... Deborah was a real woman, and she was part of a 5-person crew, but obviously it was one of the more harrowing experiences of her life when 3 of her friends she had to watch get eaten by sharks. I think this was back in the 80s. Yeah.
Well, now I feel bad for saying idiot Captain John, because I was convinced that one was fake, so I apologize. No.
And that was her boyfriend or her husband. I can't remember if they were married or not, but Captain John, yeah, he got drunk, lost control of the ship, and he's the reason that it happened.
He was drunk driving.
I mean, I don't know if it was the kind of storm that you could have just weathered if you were sober and they would have been fine, but him being drunk was not a good move.
Yeah, no, it was not. Yeah. Dang, that's so sad.
Deborah Scaling Kiley, an American sailor, and... In 1982, she famously survived a boating accident off the coast of North Carolina, became the basis for her book called Albatross.
Wow.
Not a good time.
Not a good time. At all.
Kaylee would be like trying to boop the sharks.
Sharks are very cute, and I love them.
I'd be, okay, but could you imagine you and I and our husbands were like stranded on an 11-foot dinghy and there's hundreds of sharks around. We're like, Kaylee, stop.
Stop trying to pet the sharks. They just want a little scritch.
I love how you're like, those idiots drink in the seawater. That would have been me. I would have been like, I am so thirsty. And you'd be like, Hannah, don't. And I'd be like, I have to. Actually, when Meg died on that boat, Mark admitted that he considered eating her.
Uh-huh.
Because they were obviously, like, starving. Yeah, but she was so diseased that he was like, nah. I wonder how our listeners did, though. Do you think our scary storytelling ability was any good, or they see it straight through our lives?
I don't know. I don't know if I want to ask them. I don't even want to ask the question, who do you think is a better storyteller? We're going to get our feelings hurt.
I came into this knowing that I was going to get my feelings hurt.
Well, did you guys guess which scary story was real? Or in my case, because I fucked up, I messed up. Did you guess which one wasn't real? Be sure to find us on social media and let us know how you did. And which one of us do you think is the better storyteller, Kaylee or Hannah? We're on TikTok at Crime Soup Podcast and Instagram and Twitter at crime_soup. As always, tune in next Tuesday for an all-new story. Thanks for joining us. Bon appetit. I said joining us. I'm going to have to redo that.